こんにちは。
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 今日は特別編でバーテンダーのヴィトールさんが来てくれています。イエイ。
ようこそ。
ありがとうございます。ようこそ。もともとはブラジル出身なんですよね。
そうです。
いつ何歳ぐらいまでブラジルに住んでたんですか。
ですね。まあ二十歳ぐらいまでですね。
でその時から日本語は喋れた。
両親は一世なので、両親とは今でも日本語以外喋らないことで。
ああなるほど、だからか。ブラジルめっちゃ行ってみたいんですけど、一回もまだ行ったことなくて。
面白いですよ。
全然違う感じですか、日本と。
あ、全然違う惑星ですね。
めっちゃ興味あるブラジル。
今度きっかけ作りましょう。
お願いします。もうすぐ行きたい。もう何年も前からずっと行ってるから。
So what kind of bartender are you and how did you get into that kind of
bartender? Well actually I'm just kidding because this is something that for me is kind of difficult to define. Because I don't think I have a job or either a career. I've been just following my heart and through my highest value in life since I was a kid, which was freedom. So that the meaning of the freedom has been changing over the time, of course. But then I've been doing what I just felt that I had to do. And so I get into all the exploration that I have been doing my whole life in the realm of consciousness, basically.
And what do you do in the realm of consciousness? And why is it, and why does a position like yours exist in our society now?
The position like mine? I don't understand your question.
So you would call yourself a shaman, right? Or people would refer to you as a shaman.
Well, people used to call me shaman, but I'm not sure if they know what they are talking about. So for, you know, it's a matter of convenience, I just simplify it and I say yes, but I don't consider myself a shaman.
What is the definition of shaman to you?
Well, anthropologically, you know that shaman is a term borrowed by one Siberian tribe, the Tungu tribe, in the 18th century. So it was referring to a series of practices which changed the state of consciousness of those individuals. But the shamans in those cultures, they had a very specific community role as a regulator, as a priest, as a healer, as a storyteller. But basically, he kind of accessed other informations from other dimensions of consciousness to bring those informations to this realm and reorganize, reestablish the balance. So then a shaman is someone who, well, there's a very well-known anthropologist who used to say, Christian Rach, he used to say that a shaman is a kind of broker between worlds. And it's just because, you know, a shaman have to negotiate with the realm of the spirit in order to establish a balance here in the realm of humans. And in order to do that, the shaman have to go through a very tough initiation and training, an initiation which implies his own death, and sometimes he the person who goes through that just can't come back, and you know, and he just die, or her just can't reintegrate his consciousness again in this realm. So the one who managed to reintegrate his consciousness, in this process, he gains kind of a new personal power and becomes a shaman. And then he have access to different dimensions of consciousness. So basically, but I really kind of feel like if you would define simply myself, I would say that I'm someone who is on the path.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you've said a lot there, but on the timeline of human beings, shamanism has been part of human societies for at least since the Paleolithic era, right? So at least further back than 15, 20,000 years ago, it seems like there were human beings practicing shamanism already. So it's, in some ways, it's pre-civilization.
It is true.
Mm.
But it's a kind of matrix of our own process, our own urge to break through something bigger than what we are experiencing in our immediate reality.
Mm.
You said you referred to the death of the shaman, in perhaps not literally, but what do you mean by that?
Well, sometimes it's really literal, but basically, what the person who is about to become a shaman first, he have to have certain body and energetic condition. He just have to answer one call, and then once he answered that call, he just that call can be really kind of a deep disease or some major event in his life, which takes the person to through a process of deconstruction of his own personality, of his own notion of self, and his own social and cultural agreements that maintains our cultural bubble. And that sometimes is reflected as well in our biological level. I mean, his biological level. Like he's somatized. And actually, when, you know, you open those windows to different dimensions and energies, it's all about your capacity to reintegrate it and bring in structure and meaning again, and find one point of reference in time and space, which we call I. So sometimes it's kind of literal. He's almost about to leave this world, and for, you know, he can come back, but the shaman is the one who really saw the other side and come back.
その一回エゴがなくなるっていうこと。
そうです。すべての元の自分に対する感覚、自分の周囲に対する感覚、それが一瞬と全すべて失っていく状態 に近いかもしれません。
I kind of want to establish the differences between something like this, which has traditionally been a ritualistic practice, and something like religion, where religion does not have something like ayahuasca involved in their ritual. What do you think about that distinction, or how is it different from religious practice or religious ideology?
Well, basically, religion, as far as I understand, is much more related to a process of institution, organization of power. So basically politics. It's not about necessarily about connection, which is the original meaning of the word religion.
What about the requisite or the requirement for faith? Is faith a requirement for what you're talking? Because faith is a strong requirement for religious ideology. It is basically the whole thing. But you're talking about ingesting a substance which isn't necessarily dependent on you having, like, you don't have to have faith that it will work. It works on a biochemistry level, right?
Well, you're talking about substances now, and then you're putting that in a shamanic context, or I don't understand the question.
Yeah, so in a shamanic context where a shaman is either taking or administering ayahuasca, it doesn't really matter if you're open towards, like in a religion, you have to have faith for the religion to work. But if you are taking a substance, or if you're taking ayahuasca, I'm assuming that, you know, your faith isn't really required for it to work. It will work. Right?
That's right. Yes. Like any chemical component that you ingest.
It's interesting to have there are a lot of different substances in this world that people take, from pharmaceutical drugs to crack cocaine or heroin or plenty of legal drug, alcohol, all of these things, but there isn't really a human heritage or a lineage with it the way there is for ayahuasca. Is that right?
Heritage, you mean? That is
something that was handed down from our ancestors, I guess.
Well, yes, there is, but like in any traditional culture, is through, you know, the transmissions is oral. So you don't really find a record on when that started and who was the person who discovered that among billions of species of plants, you combine two specific species to bring all the outcome that ayahuasca can bring you in terms of consciousness and healing and, well, inner expansion.
そのもともと歴史的にどういうその効能効果みたいなものを求めて使われてたものなんですか？
ayahuascaのことですか？歴史的にはまずアマゾンジャングルの中 にある部族の探求を見てみれば、大体一つはヒーリングですね。ヒーリングともう一つは部族の中にあるにから出てくる 問題を解決するためとか、
うん、
それ以外はあと、まあ、経済的なあの判断もありますね。
あ、なるほど、うん、その最初のヒーリングっていうのはその病気とかの治療っていう意味のヒーリングということですか？
そうですね、病気とか、うん、あ、まあ身体とか、
うん、
心の病気とかそういうところにすごくよく聞きますので、
うん、なんかそのアヤワスカの体験談ってネットとかで見てもたくさんあるんですけど、なんか面白いなと思うのはそれぞれみんなこう体験するものが違うというか、得るものも違うし、その感想もすごい違うなっていうのが不思議というか面白いなと思ってるんですけど、
はい、
なんかそのヴィトルさんにとってアヤワスカっていうのはどういうものですか？
僕に対してアヤワスカはまず大地の意識です。大地の多分今の人類に対してのメッセージ、あの最大なメッセージかもしれません。で、どこでそのメッセージになるのか、何を伝えているのかと言いますと、まずあの心を、自分の持っている心の内容を明らかにさせていただくんですよね、
うん、
すごく意識が敏感になって、あのいろいろと生命がの循環が悪いところ、それを気づかせてあのくれる非常に貴重な薬物だと思っています。
うん、So do you conduct these ayahuasca ceremonies yourself?
Yes, I do.
And what is the process like for someone who is doing it for the first time? I've heard there's like a particular diet they might want to be on, or setting an intention, things of that sort.
Exactly. Well, first of all, the person really needs to know exactly why he or she is willing to go through this experience.
Mm.
And then needs to respect a diet, of course, because it's a very... basically, it's a cleansing substance. So more you get cleansed, less turbulence you have in your process.
Mm.
So you get to the point more easily. Because what you want is getting more consciousness of your own contents.
What would be the most, I don't know if it's a good question, but what would be the good intention in your opinion?
You might consider that behind one intention there is one need. So first is listening to your heart, and really trying to listen to what is your need in your life right now. And then you start from there. Because usually what you need used to be kind of usually is different than what you desire, for example. So it's not really easy to discern, really it's not everybody that is in touch with their true needs in their lives.
You mentioned something about coming back from the experience, or having to process the experience. So it sounds to me like someone will take ayahuasca and then their mind may be in some kind of disequilibrium, and reacquiring, getting that equilibrium back is the learning and the growing process, which happens after you take it.
Well, actually, I was talking about a process of when a person going through a shamanic initiation, right? So not necessarily who takes ayahuasca go through that, but can happen, you know, in a different degree, of course. But if you are asking something related to what might happen to the person who is taken the first time and who faces the one increase of the energy level or kind of voltage in their brain, and the mind cannot sustain that, if that's the question, I didn't understand your question. Actually, what's the point?
From taking ayahuasca, is the growth, the development as an individual, that happens as you're readjusting after the experience? Is that correct?
That you readjust your experience in the work with ayahuasca, you mean?
To reintegrate your experience back with the world after you've taken ayahuasca.
Your daily life, yes.
Yeah. So like the personal growth that people experience from taking ayahuasca, I guess I'm asking is, at what stage in the process does that occur?
The stage in the process in one night or what?
When?
In which range of time you're talking about?
I don't know. After they take ayahuasca, I'm assuming like if you're going to grow from that experience, then how long does the effect of ayahuasca last on the person who took it? And
okay, so you're talking about growth, and you're talking about the range of time that the ayahuasca itself is working in your system. Is that right?
Or I guess the range of time that it has an impact on that person. Is it forever or?
Oh, well, if you take one dose depending of the intensity of the medicine, and it might last like 4 to 5 hours, sometimes 6, you know. And then among that space of time, then you have a whole series of experience that you might access certain, you know, memories or not, or certain visions that may or not be related to your personal history, your biography. And but actually, when we talk about growth, we are talking about going through our shadows as well. We are talking about confronting our fears or bias or relationships that really is not working, relationships which was matricial, constitutive of the formation of our ego, or even from beyond or this personal physical body. So depending on how deep you go through that, and in your stage of your own life, your psychic life, then it will be kind of proportional also to how much you really have your intention clear. And I think there is certain kind of guidelines, as you said. First you know your intention, and then this intention implies the state of your life, you know, where you're standing in your whole process your path. And then there are sometimes certain issues that comes up, and depending on how you decide to deal with those issues, then you decide or not to grow or not, because at the end is your decision. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you understand what you have to do, but then you come back to your daily life and you stay the same, and then you go to another session and you go through that again, and depend. Everyone have it's his or she her own time in the process. It's really relative, it's not kind of there are many variables involved in one person's process.
The substances that are those plants that are combined to produce this brew, it contains, my understanding is that it contains neurotransmitters that are endogenous to the human brain. In other words, the chemicals in the compounds in those plants are compounds that already exist inside the human brain. Is that?
Well, basically,
as you were saying, like turning up the voltage. So it's kind of like it's using a natural aspect of your mind. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, more or less. You're talking about the active principle, the alkaloid, which is actually is a hormone, which is the DMT. Now it's well known that it's produced by our brain in the moment of our death and the moment of our birth. Curious enough. But you can find it in many plants, different plants and different animals as well.
その生まれる時と死ぬ以外に DMT 作って体内では作ってないっていうことですか？
そうです。
はあ、なるほど。面白い、めっちゃ。
Well, I've heard speculation that because the in the Christian Bible, when Moses was speaking to this burning plant, this bush, people have speculated that the plant was something called an acacia bush, which contains a lot of dimethyltryptamine in it. So like his hallucinations and stuff may have been related to the DMT and that bush.
Well, it's a very interesting narrative, but still is a speculation.
Yeah.
What is the most memorable things that it did to you, or that it showed you?
The brew?
Yeah.
The possibility of our own liberation, the possibility of the liberation from our ignorance.
Like, does it allow you to separate yourself from the cultural or social, I don't know how to say it. Like all the things that you think is normal, or like things that are normalized by the culture or the society that you don't necessarily agree with, but then you're not aware of. Does it make sense?
Yes, but what's the question? To separate myself from those? Like, oh, yes?
Yeah, like all the things that you're basically drowning in the current society with all the culture and everything, you know, like advertisements and TV and
yes,
all kinds of stuff.
Well, yes, it makes usually it makes us more sensitive to all those frequencies, which really does not really have a value in terms of consciousness. It's kind of really something that just drains you energy. And when you get to the shamanic perspective, you are always thinking in terms of energy, your relationship that establishes or not some level of relationship. The level of energy. So that's why when a person is working with those kinds of medicines and opening the subtle realm, it's very difficult to live in a place like Tokyo or São Paulo, New York, you know, big cities. It's too much frequencies. And then it trains you much more than normal people. Normal by mainstream, you know, or because the mainstream is, you know, is not everybody in the tribe which is a shaman. And when you are a shaman, you have to have a different diet in relation to others. And you establish a different relationship because it compromises your energy field. And then you can't do your work. It just that drains you and until the moment that you just die.
Like it's too much?
Yes, it requires a lot of energy to navigate to different realms.
So is it extra exhausting for you to be in Tokyo?
Well, somehow yes, but I told you I don't consider myself a shaman.
Okay, so
I work a lot in those subtle levels and work a lot, you know, with groups and circles. Then I enter to this unconscious field of those groups and I have to digest it. I have to process it. And of course, in a place like Tokyo, it's much more difficult to me.
What are these other realms like? Are there people there in these realms, or what is, if there's some general things that we can say about the experiences that people have in these realms, what would that be?
This is a very tricky question, actually, because there are many, many different realms. And of course, you know, like we are communicating here probably in between three realms that we can be conscious of. But then we're here in this material realm through this physical body. And then when you get to more subtle energetic realm, and then you need other vehicles to be there and to interact and to just, you know, like how we are here, you know, bounded by this notion of space and time. And then there are other realms which have another parameters of space and time and other values of energy. And then, which means that you need other different kinds of body to inhabit there. So then if you have those vehicles, because those vehicles also implies how much you can perceive of the reality, and there's all sort of different intelligence in those realms, which is at the same time here and now also. It's just that we don't have access. So as we don't have access, we just kind of live by as if nothing is happening, but actually, you know, there's lots of movement if you kind of start to open your perception. That's why you get more vulnerable.
Mm.
You get more exposed, because once you get to perceive those different realms and then interact with those different energies, then there are certain agreements that takes place as well.
Mm-hmm.
But as this goes to the same question that we might pose ourselves, you know, why we are here, who we are, and where we are thinking or willing to go from here. And those questions is, you know, are valid in all those different dimensions.
Hmm.
Why, I mean, I have no idea, but why, what is your take on why we're here, or why anything exists at all? Like, why does anything exist? I mean, do you have some take on that? Or?
Yes, I suppose. But of course, it's a really great, great mystery. And I know what I want, what's the purpose that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell that, you know, as a statement that this is for every being.
Mm.
I will tell, okay, so we're here to evolve. Maybe, you know, I just don't want to define, so I don't put my own bias in it.
Mm.
So I prefer to raise new questions than to keep emotion.
Mm. Do you think the answer to that question is potentially different for every single person?
Well, probably is the same.
Mm.
But I don't dare to state that is the same.
Mm. Some people have... there has been a great increase in interest in indigenous peoples and their ritualistic practices, and more and more high-profile people, celebrities and artists and creators and whatnot, have gone and participated in this sort of ayahuasca tourism. What kind of effect do you think it might have on our culture and our society and so forth in the long term?
Well, I can tell what I'm witnessing right now in different places that I've been working, and there are always two sides. One is always kind of positive, you know, but I would tend to think and, you know, put my intention over, like, you know, thinking that more and more people get access to the medicine, ayahuasca as a medicine, and so they can be more in touch with their own essence and truly open their heart,
mm,
and then truly be more in love, be more in compassion, you know, be more clear and more integrated with the nature, But at the other hand, I feel like we're in a society that the market easily takes over, and there is a huge rupture in the world economy, that, you know, the huge gap between those who have the resources and those who don't have the resources. Mm-hmm. And I include all those indigenous people all over the world, you know, that we from the West or from the middle high class society, we tend to bring our own bias and, you know, project our own ideal of this powerful shaman that will take us to the mystery of the universe, and then at the end of the day, you don't just realize that they are struggling to survive as a, you know, the last tribe, you know, representing what this war that is going on in the rainforest, for example, just to quote an example of one place that, well, if we are talking about ayahuasca in this context, you know, we are talking about the Amazon rainforest.
Mm.
So when you get into the daily reality of the rainforest, it's really kind of a civil war, you know, and even between, well, those indigenous people who just don't have the basics, you know, just don't have the clean water, just, you know, the earth got so polluted,
mm.
you know, and lots of money around, you know, those resources. You have lots of mines, you have gas, you have, and then you have trees, you have, you know, biopirates, you have the narcos, you know, and of different governments, which now became, like you go to Peru now, it's really a narco government.
Mm.
Mm.
So if you talk about shamanism, you need to realize that shamanism is something really, one very pragmatic and sober path. You know, a shaman is not what you might think, that is just tripping around, but actually is very, very pragmatic, down-to-earth person. You know, it's really kind of simple, who went through a lot of sacrifice. And so the negative part of the, you know, overexposure and misinformation about something which is so sacred, like, you know, well, now here we are using the name ayahuasca, but I think it's important to remember that ayahuasca is just one name which was internationally popularized among many other names that this brew have, you know, from different tribes. And ayahuasca is Quechua, and not everybody speaks Quechua, but in the West we just defined that as a name. And when you put a name in something, you kind of established one reality, right? If you don't understand the context, then you lose the whole message in it. And so it's already happening a whole kind of chaos around the use of and abuse of the sacred medicine. And part of it is kind of, you know, just maybe we humans, we are so naive, and then we just tend to think that, you know, we just master, we can get power over something which is really mysterious and which goes way beyond our narrow cultural mind. So it's a very complex question.
Yeah, it's crazy to think how narrow our views are generally as people, because we're not just when I'm thinking right now, I'm thinking exactly the person I am. A lot of the reasons why I think the things I do is because of where I grew up and what I was told. It's not something I went out and necessarily sought myself. And that, as well as we are all thinking as people within our time. So everyone that I speak to and everyone I see is, you know, a modern person as well. And I think there's probably cultural implications to that as well. Do you agree with that notion that we're limited by the era that we're born into and of course the places that we're born into, and can these things help us deal with those restrictions?
Absolutely. Well, basically, that was also part of my own quest, and if you don't mind, I can share you one project that I'm doing, which is directly related to that.
Yes, please.
Which is I name it "The Bridge of the Medicines of the Four Directions," and I just named. At one point of this whole process, I named something that I was already doing, which was a bridge. Like you yourself, you know, you're this incredible mixture between North America and Japan. And, well, my parents are Japanese, and then I was born and raised in Brazil. And I was always traveling a lot. And at one point, of course, I was raised speaking in Japanese with my parents. And then outside world was the melting pot, which is Brazil. And there's one point where you're kind of building your identity over all those cultural stimuli that you go through with your the matrix of your family. And for me, that was quite claustrophobic. And I had to see outside. And that was part of my quest of trying to understand who am I. And so I need to travel, and then I need to get into different initiations from different traditions to understand different languages. And from that, I could see the flaws of my own cultural matrix and kind of overcome it. I was inspired by one movement, which they say it started like 1,200 years before Christ, in the Turtle Island, which actually is a place called Oaxaca in Mexico. And it was a movement called the Twisted Hairs. And for the traditions in the North, North America, the hair is a symbol for knowledge. So when you twist your hair, then you're twisting systems of knowledge. And when you're a twisted hair, they kind of invite you to study 2-3 other different traditions. So you make your own twisted hair. And from that, you evolve in from your cultural matrix, you know, and then you can actualize your own make culture, your own mind frame, your own, you know, references of reality, and improve it. So for me, the bridge was one of the answer, and it was when I understood from relating to different traditions that they actually had different technologies in order to work with energy and information, as the modern technology do in a more external way. And then this ancient technology would help you do that, you know, into your inner world. It expands inside, you know, inside and out, and reconnect you from in the first person. You really don't need someone in between to take you to some other place, you know, which is beyond your cultural matrix. So yes, I feel like we're pretty much conditioned by our culture, our times, and we're a product of our time and space. And at one point we need it, but in order to evolve, I think we went to a threshold in as a human beings that we just need to. I know that the term is a kind of cliche, but somehow an understand of what it means to awake, really. Meaning that we just dissolve all this conditioning and have our naked perception towards the reality.
I feel like people, or at least I did, but people generally have that kind of experience at some point in their life when they leave their when they leave their home, when they leave their family for the first time and like move out, and just you know you say bye to your parents and you go off somewhere, and you have all these culturally conditioned notions from being in your family, and you think your family is normal, right? But you go outside and it's like, it turns out your family's not normal, and you kind of go out into this huge world, and it's a very dramatic transformation.
Yeah.
So you have to go.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, well, thank you so much.
Be, considerate of your time. So
yeah.
Thank you so much. It's such a opportunity to get a unique perspective from someone like you who's involved in these things. So,
yeah, I hope you can come back and...
It would be my pleasure,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, do this again.
Yeah.
Thank you for the invitation. It was really
thank you
great
so much
to share here.
Thank you so much.
An honor.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye.